Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
It is November the 21st. We are in Sefer Shmuel. We're in Parak Beis Chapter 2. And we'll have to pass the Gedalah verse 11. Before we begin, I would like to mention that our class, our Navi class, which we've been having now for how many years? It's been we're in our seventh year, I believe.
You've been living here?
Yeah.
So we have there has been a member of the community has decided to sponsor this class.
Wow.
So for now, the person wishes to remain anonymous, but we of course appreciate it, and so you should know that we're on the map.
We started with Yecheskel. We did Daniel.
Ezra
Nehemia. Before Daniel, we did right. We did no. That was we did Daniel first. Then Ezra Nehemia. We did Rus.
Right.
We did Yonah.
Yeah.
No. Some we sped through a little bit.
Solomon.
Get comfy.
I have to
pull
a few
all nighters
for you.
Just a few.
The problem when it's online is you can't read it fast. When I listen online, I move the thing up so like you're speaking twice as fast. The person speaking twice as fast.
Really?
Yeah, because I get
all.
I won't listen to so long.
I
won't
talk
now.
Like the
segment of class.
Right.
So tonight we are going to be dealing with the chet, the sin of the B'nai Eli, of the children of Eli. And we are going to be introduced to what they did wrong, and we're going to be introduced to the consequences of what they did. Now, it's important as we're going through to follow the storyline, which has several interruptions which you would not have expected to be here. And of course, if we have interruptions, they must not be interruptions. They must be part of the storyline, even though it doesn't appear to be so evident why. So bear that in mind. Now, before we even begin this, the children of Eli were mentioned once already. They were mentioned once already, back in the beginning of the Sefer, back in Perek Aleph, in chapter 1, in Pasuk Gimel, verse 3. Remember that the Sefer Shmuel, the book of Shmuel, begins with an introduction of Elkanah, and as soon as we're introduced to Elkanah, we're introduced to his two wives. And the very next thing, the third pasuk, also introduces us to the special mitzvah of Elkanah. And the pasuk tells us that the man went up from his city every year to bow and to offer sacrifices to Hashem in Shiloh. And it says at the end of the pasuk, Visham Shnei V'nei Eli, and there were the two sons of Eli, Chafni U'Pinchas, Kohanim LaHashem, Kohanim to Hashem. When we first were introduced to Chafni and Pinchas, the children of Eli, the sons of Eli, who are Kohanim to Hashem, we were introduced to them in a very positive light, that Elkanah would go up to Shiloh, where he would get his infusion of spirituality, and part of that experience was to be in the presence of Chafni and Pinchas, the great Kohanim to Hashem. Had the story ended with that, we would have assumed that Chafni and Pinchas are very righteous, wonderful people. And now, we're going to see that they in fact had a terrible sin or sins on their hands. Pasuk Gedalah, verse 11 in Parak Beis in chapter 2. Vayelech Elkanah Haramasa. So this is the sequel to the story we had until now of Shmuel being born, and then the tefillah of Chana, the song of Chana. So then Elkanah went back to Ramah, al Beiso, to his house. Vehanar, and the lad, meaning Shmuel, Hayam Mishares es Hashem, was serving Hashem, es Pnei Eli HaKohen, and serving Eli the Kohen. It's a funny way of putting it. It says the lad was serving Hashem, the face of Eli the Kohen. So was he serving Hashem or was he serving the face of Eli HaKohen? So from here we derive that someone who serves Talmidei Chachamim, someone who serves Torah scholars, is like serving the Divine Presence. So since he was serving Eli, that was as if he was serving Hashem himself. Yud Beis, Pasuk 12. The Pasuk Yud Beis, verse 12. Uvnei Eli b'nei Belial. And the sons of Eli were b'nei Belial. Belial is a contraction of Belial, without a yoke.
Doesn't it also mean without going up?
It could also be that. It could also be that, yeah. But it's taken to mean that they were those who threw the yoke of Hashem off of themselves. Lo yodu es Hashem. They did not know Hashem. And now the Navi proceeds to tell us how it is that they did not know Hashem. Umishpat ha-kohanim es ha'am. The rule of the kohanim with the nation was kol ish zaveach zavach. Any person who would offer a sacrifice. This is referring to the type of sacrifice that is eaten by the owner of the animal. Now, before we read the rest of the pasuk, let me tell you the halacha. The way it works is that there are certain sacrifices, like an ola, that gets completely burned and nothing is eaten, not by the kohen nor by the owner of the sacrifice. Then there are some sacrifices that are partially burned and partially eaten by the kohen, like a chatas, a sin offering, is not eaten by the person who offers it. If a person has to bring a sin offering, a chatas, partially it's burnt and partially eaten by the kohen. None of it is eaten by the person who brings it. And then you have like a karban shlamim. Shlamim means shalim, complete, because everybody gets a part of it. It goes partially to the mizbeach, it's burned, partially eaten by the kohen, and partially eaten by the owner of the animal. The animal we're talking about is either a cow, or a sheep, or a goat. Now, a cow, sheep, and a goat are large animals. A cow is much larger than a sheep and a goat, but nevertheless, even a sheep and a goat, there's a lot of meat on a sheep and on a goat. The fats are burned on the mizbeach. The chaze v'shok, which is the chest of the animal, and the leg of the animal, one of the legs of the animal, is given to the kohen. The kohen gets the chaze v'shok. The rest of the animal is eaten by the owner, the one who brought it. And he can bring guests to eat from it as well. But that's who eats the rest of the meat. So the kohen is entitled to the chaze v'shok, the chest and the leg. So here it says, let's start again, Yud Gimel 13. Umishpat ha-kohanim es ha'am, it was the rule of the kohanim with the nation. Kol ish zaveach zevach, anyone who would offer a sacrifice, this is referring to a shlamim, the type of sacrifice that the owner would also eat from it. Uban nar ha-kohen, and the lad of the kohen would come. So not Chafni and Pinchas themselves, but there would be one of the lads of the kohanim would come. Kivashel habasar, while the meat was cooking. The mazleg shlosh hashinayim biyado, and the mazleg, a mazleg is a fork, but this is a large fork, shlosh hashinayim, with three prongs, biyado was in his hand. In other words, it wasn't like a skewer where you can only get a hold of one piece, or you know, it's harder to grab with. This was a three pronged skewer, which we call a fork, but a large one, which could easily grab meat. Vihikava kiyar, and he would hit in the basin. It's interesting that the word hika, which means to strike, mm-hmm. is the word that the Navi uses, and this is common usage when you spear some meat with a fork. It's called hika, to hit, and you find that language throughout. This is not an obscure usage, but it means to grab it with the fork. Vikava kior, and he would strike in the basin, obadud, or in the pot, ova kalachas, is another type of pot, ova parur, a fourth type of pot, four different types of containers of cooking meat. Kol asher yaleha mazleg, whatever the fork would pick up, Yikach HaKohen Bo. The Kohen would take with it. He would take whatever meat he got. So even though he might be taking meat that was not, that the Kohen was not entitled to, was not the chaza, was not the shok, he would still take it. Kach HaYasu L'chol Yisrael. So they would do to all the Jews, Habayim Sham B'Shiloh, that were coming there in Shiloh. So this was common practice, that they would take whatever meat they wanted from the cooking pots of meat, rather than only the chest and the leg, which they were entitled to. That's one problem. That's sin number one. Number two, Gam B'Terem Yak Tirun Es HaChelav. Also, before they would burn the fats, let me just give you an introduction to the system of how it worked. The animal was first slaughtered. The blood was caught in a cup. The blood was then taken to the mizbeach, to the altar, and it was thrown on the altar. That throwing of the blood is officially when the karban is considered to be kosher. That throwing of the blood is when the karban is considered to have done its job. If at that point something would go wrong, let's say after the blood was thrown, the meat would become tamei, would become impure, or it would get messed up and wouldn't be able to be eaten. It wouldn't matter. This, once they throw the blood, then it's considered that you fulfilled your obligation. Whatever you had to do, you did. After the blood is thrown, then the animal is taken, it's skinned, and it is cut up into its specific parts. We're talking about an animal that's eaten. And then the various parts are some of it gets burned on the mizbeach, the fats get burned on the mizbeach, and the other parts get cooked, and the Kohen gets the pieces that he gets, and the Yisrael gets what he gets, and it goes like that. So in Pasuk Tezva, verse 15, it says, Gam b'terem yaktiru nesachelev, prior to the burning of the fats, uvan nar ha-kohen, again, this lad of the Kohen would come, va'amar lo isha zovech, and he would say to the man who was offering the sacrifice, t'na vasar, give meat, litzlos la-kohen, to roast for the Kohen, meaning give the Kohen his due, give the Kohen the chazeh v'shok, the chest and the leg. V'lo yikach mimcha basar mevushol, he will not take from you cooked meat, ki imchai, the Kohen wants the raw meat, the meat as it is now, even though it's a little bit premature, because really the fats have not yet been burned on the mizbeach. Now the meat is kosher, it's allowed to be eaten even prior to the fats being burned on the mizbeach, however, or at least it could be taken at that time, however, it was typically not taken until after the mizbeach got its thing, the fats were burned on the mizbeach, and then you distributed the rest of the meat to whomever was supposed to get it.
Chai means raw.
Okay. Raw. So he says he's not going to take from you cooked meat, he wants it raw. Vayomer elav ish, the man would say to him, meaning the owner of the karban would say to him, Katerak tirun kayom achelev, they're going to burn the chelev, the fats today. Let them do that. And then take whatever your soul desires. Now, wait a few minutes. Wait for them to burn the fats. V'amar lo, and the lad would say, we have lamed vav, which means to him, but it's also read lamed aleph. He would say no. Ki ata sitein, you will give it now. V'im lo, and if you don't want to give it now, v'kati v'chazka, I will take it with force. I will force you to give the meat to the Kohen. So this is the second sin. There were two sins that were enumerated so far. There are going to be three, but there were two. One is that they would take whatever meat would come up on the fork. That's while the meat is being cooked, and even though it was not what they were entitled to get. And second of all, even before the meat was cooked, while it was still raw, and before the mizbeach got what it was supposed to get, they would demand their parts.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
How do we know by just reading this, or maybe we don't, that it's not the lad acting on his own trying to, you know, I'm going to get the best for my master.
Okay, very good.
And how much it really is the sons of Eli.
Okay, good. Excellent. So Mrs. Lewis is pointing out that It does not say here that this was the sons of Eli doing this. It was the lad of the Kohen. Now, it is important to note that it does say in the beginning of Yud-Gimel, beginning of 13, Umishpat HaKohanim Esam, the law of the Kohanim with the nation. But how much of this was coming from top down, and how much of this was being done from bottom up?
It said that they were worthless, so maybe they were worthless in overseeing that everything was done right.
Okay.
Not necessarily that they said to
okay.
do it wrong.
Okay, so good. So hold that thought. We're going to see how that goes. That's a very, very good observation, that they did not, it doesn't say that they would come and do this. But it did go on. It definitely went on under their watch. Yud Zayin 17. Vatihi chatas ha-ne'arim, this will emphasize your point, the sin of the lads was gedola ma'od, very large, et p'nei Hashem, on the face of Hashem. Ki mi'atzuha anashim es minchas Hashem, for the men had degraded the mincha, the gift of Hashem, meaning the karban, which is supposed to be a gift to Hashem, they were degrading it and treating it in this way, to make sure to take whatever they wanted, and also to take the meat prior to the time the Mizbeach got it. So it was the sin of the lads.
The Nara applies young.
Yes.
Not
yeah.
men. We don't know the age of Chafni Pinchas.
Right. We know the age of Chafni
Unless
Pinchas.
They were the shlicha for Chafni Pinchas.
Yeah. This was not Chafni and Pinchas personally doing it. It was the lads. Now, also, it's important to note that the word chatas, which means sin, it definitely means sin, there are stronger words for sin. As you know, in Yom Kippur, we say la'avonos, la'chatos, la'avonos, la'pesha'im. There are different words for sin. A pesha is usually understood to mean the worst kind of sin, a rebellious sin. And avon is understood to mean a sin done on purpose. A chatas is usually a sin done by accident, or at least without the correct pieces of information. So it's not
premeditated.
What's that?
Do you think it's premeditated?
No, it's not. A chatas is usually not premeditated.
Isn't
so
that like missing the mark, chatas?
Yeah, it could mean that too. That's true.
Okay.
So the fact that the Navi uses this word for sin is somewhat. Is somewhat
confusing.
Wait, inconsistent, right? Because it says that it was great, right? Kedola ma'od, very great.
Yeah.
So it's interesting that it would use a downgraded word for sin.
Unless they didn't know how bad it was, but the people that they
okay.
answered to.
Okay, very good. So it would seem that although what they were doing was bad, but they didn't understand how bad it was, because you wouldn't use the word chatas normally. Okay, but let's see. Now, here's what I wanted you to see, that right in the middle of the story, we're in the middle of telling you the sins of the Kohanim, and we get a little bit of an interlude. Ushmuel mishareses pnei Hashem. Shmuel was serving the face of Hashem, which, you'll recall, was mentioned only a few psukim ago.
Right.
That those words were used in Pasuk Yedaleth in verse 11. So it's only seven psukim ago, and we seem to be repeating ourselves. Shmuel was serving the face of Hashem. Na'ar, he was a lad. Which, why is that mentioned? He was a lad.
Because the other one was a na'ar.
What's that?
Contrasting the na'ar between him and the other.
Okay. So it seems the word na'ar is being emphasized over here. We had the word na'ar. The word na'ar was used about Shmuel in Pasuk Yedaleth in verse 11. Then we've had the Nar of the Kohen a couple of times, and now we have Nar again. So he was serving the face of Hashem, he was a lad. Chagur Ephod Bud, and he was belted with a linen belt. He was wearing a linen belt that he had. I'm sorry, not a belt, a tunic, right,
uh-huh.
A linen tunic. Umi'il katon ta'aselo imo, and his mother would make for him a small mi'il. A mi'il is a jacket. So it was like a formal piece of clothing. V'ha'osa lo mi'amim yamima, she would bring it up for him each year. V'ha'osa es isha, when she came up with her husband, Tishilo. Lizboach es zemach hayamim, to offer the sacrifices of the days. So his mother would make him a nice little cloak, and she'd bring it up with him. very beautiful piece of information we're being told. Right? Uberach Eli es Alkana ves Ishto, and Eli would give a bracha to Alkana, to his wife. V'amar, he would say, Yasem Hashem lecha zera min ha'isha hazos. He would say to Alkana, Hashem should give you more children from this wife. Tachas hasheela asheshoa la Hashem, in place of the request that she made of Hashem, and then she asked for Shmuel, and Hashem should give you even more children from her. V'hochulim kamo, and then he would go back to his place, to Alkana's place. Kifa kana sem es kana, for Hashem had remembered kana. V'tar v'tilad shlosha v'anum shtei v'anos. And she became pregnant and had three sons and two daughters in addition to Shmuel. We mentioned last time that it's a debate whether she actually had whether she had these five children. I think it's in addition to Shmuel. No, I'm sorry. This would be including Shmuel. But she had, whether she actually had, one second, hold on.
It says gave birth to
three sons. Yeah, no, I'm just trying to remember if this is in addition to Shmuel or not. No, according to what the Medrash we learned last time, it would be not, it would be with, this doesn't include Shmuel. She actually would have six because, as we learned last time, she had
five and two.
Her children and two. Right. Right. I apologize. Right. So these would be her own children. That's right. So she had three sons and two daughters.
Altogether.
Right. I think so. Vayigdal Hanar, and the lad grew up. Vayigdal Hanar, Shmuel, and Shmuel, the lad grew up, again emphasizing that he's Hanar. Im Hashem, with Hashem. So he grew up with Hashem.
Rabbi?
Yeah.
I have a question on verse 19.
Let me clarify, because I want to make sure I got it right. She had a total of five children, including Shmuel.
Including Shmuel.
Before it said seven children, so we learned that because she davened that Penina's last two children should not die, they were considered her children because she saved her life. Right. But she had five biological children, including Shmuel. Okay, now we're still in the middle, but yes, question?
So if you go back to 19, it says that when she came yearly with her husband and they would get their sacrifices, but I thought they came up three times a year.
Yeah, so there's a debate whether they came three times a year or annually. But even if it means three times a year, it means the three times they would come up each year, they would do this.
I think from the beginning it was very clear about the three times and it went to great depth about it.
Well,
it seems odd that it just switches to yearly.
It is from here that someone suggests that it was never three times a year, it was once a year. Because it's not clear whether in Shiloh you were supposed to go three times a year or only once a year. Because it wasn't the Beis HaMikdash. But most Mefarshim say it was three times a year, and this doesn't mean once a year, it just means yearly she would go up, but it doesn't mean only once per year. It means the times that they would go up each year. It's a little bit inexact, but yeah.
Okay.
So, I'm sorry, so here we have a little bit of an interlude in the whole story. Chav Beis, 22. Ve'eli Zakin Mo'ed, Eli was very old. V'shama Eskol Asher Yasun Banav L'chol Yisrael. And he heard all that his children, that his sons did to all the Jews. And here's the third sin. Ve'is Asher Yishkevun Es Hanashim Hatzovos Pesach Ha'amoed. And they would, Yishkevun literally means lie with the women, Hatzovos, that were congregating in the doorway of the Ha'amoed. That seems pretty serious. Vayomer lahem, it's curious that wasn't mentioned before. Like, you know, we mentioned two sins before, and now Eli heard all that, and he also heard this third thing. Vayomer lahem, and he said to them, Lama sasun kadvarim o'ela, why are you doing these things? Asher anochi shamea es divrechem roim, I'm hearing these bad things about you. Me'es kol ha'am ela, from all of these nation, all the people of this nation. Albanai, no, don't do it, my sons. Kilo tova hashmua, for it is not a good rumor. Asher anochi shomea, that I am hearing ma'avirim am Hashem, that the nation of God is passing around. It's not good when I'm reading on Facebook about you. That's not a good thing.
Is low spelled differently than normal? Low?
No,
here it's lava.
Yeah. Has a full.
Yes. Yeah, that's an unusual spelling.
Is it when you redress someone down or something?
No. It seems to be a combination of to him and no. But I'm not sure what it would mean over here. If a man sins to another man, Ufilalo elo, this should be Elohim, and the judge will punish him. V'im laHashem yachata ish, but if a man sins to God, mi espalalo, who is going to judge him? Right? What's that?
Defend
him, right? V'lo yishmu l'kol aviyem, but they would not listen to the voice of their father. Ki chafes Hashem l'amisam, for Hashem wanted to put them to death. Meaning, since they were not listening to their father, therefore Hashem wanted to put them to death.
Don't they use the word yispala?
Yeah, yeah. It means to defend or to advocate for them. V'hanar Shmuel holich v'gadol v'tov. Now again, here we have a little bit of an interlude. And the lad Shmuel was going and growing and good. Gami Hashem, also with Hashem, but Gami Manashem, and also with man. Now, back to the story. Vayavo ish elokim el Eli, and the man of God came to Eli. Chazal tell us this man of God is?
Shmuel.
Elkanah.
Oh, right.
This is Elkanah, Shmuel's father. And the man of God came to Eli. Vayom re'elav, and he said to him, Ko amar Hashem, so said Hashem. Hanigro niglesi aves avicha, didn't I appear to your father's house, biyosam b'mitzrayim, when they used to be in Egypt, aves paro, in the house of paro, didn't I already appear to your father's house, which means an ancestor of yours was already a Navi, was a prophet in Egypt. Who is the ancestor of Eli, who was a prophet in Egypt?
Aaron.
Was Aaron HaKohen. It is from here that we learn that Aaron was a prophet prior to Moshe. Which is why Moshe didn't want to accept the leadership of the Jewish people, because he felt he was usurping his older brother Aaron. Aaron was already a prophet. Didn't I already appear to your father's household in Egypt? Uvachor oso, and didn't I already choose him? Mikol shivtei Yisrael, from all the tribes of Yisrael, li l'kohen, for me to be a kohen. La los amiz bechi, to go up on my altar. L'haktir ketores, to offer the incense. Lases ephod lefonai, to carry the ephod in front of me. That would be to wear the ephod, is what it would mean. To wear the tunic, right? And I gave to the house of your father as kol ishe b'nei Yisrael, all the ishe, the fires, which means the sacrifices of the Jewish people. Loma sivatu bezivchi. Why do you rebel against my sacrifice and my offerings? I should see vici ma'on, that I commanded for this place. And you honored your sons more than me. To give them to eat from the choicest of all the offerings of the Jews in front of my nation. So the sin that he is emphasizing, that Elkanah is emphasizing in the name of Hashem, is that they took the meat prior to the Mizbeach getting its due. That they went first. That you took your food from the beginning, that's prior to anything else. So you went first. Lachain nuum Hashem Elokei Yisrael. Therefore, says Hashem, the God of Yisrael, Amor Amarti. I had said, Beischo beisavicha yitzarchu lefanai ad olam. Your house and the house of your father will go before me forever. Ve'ato, and now nuum Hashem, says Hashem, Chalila li, it should be profane to me. Ki mechabdai achabed uvozai yekolu. I'm not going to do that anymore. I'm not going to give you that honor that I had said to you I was going to give you. For those who honor me will be honored, and those who degrade me, they will be disgraced. Hinei yamin vayim, behold, days are coming. Vigadati es zeroacha, and I will cut off your seed. Vezeroa beis avicha, and the seed of your father's house. Miyos zaken beveisecha, from there being an elder in your house. There will not be an old man in your household. Which means, as we're about to see, they're all going to die young. Vihi batta tsar ma'on. And you will see, tsar, you will see, like a tsar comes from the word tsar, like a co-wife. You will see a competitor in this place. Maon is in this place. B'chol asher yetivetz Yisrael, in all that is being done good for the Jews, meaning that when the Beis HaMikdash is going to be built and it will be good for the Jews, there will be a competitor that will take your place. V'lo yezakim b'veis kol kol hayom, there will not be an old man in your household all of the days. V'ish lo achris b'chameim mizbechiyah, will not cut off a man of yours from my mizbeach. In other words, you're not going to be cease to be kohanim, you're still going to be kohanim. L'kalos eseinecha v'ladiv esnafshecha, the reason why I'm going to keep you as kohanim is in order to make your eyes it's a good translation for this.
Make thine eyes to fail.
To fail, okay.
Consume your eyes.
Okay. And to pain your soul. Now you're going to see your competitor take over, but you're not going to be able to quit the business. And all those who are raised in your house, Yomusu Anashim, will die as men, which means they will not die as old men, they'll die as young men. And this is the sign that you'll know that this is about to happen. Asher yavo ashnei v'anecha, that will come to your two sons. El chafni u'pinchas, the chafni u'pinchas. B'yom echad yamusu shneim, on one day they will both die. V'akimosi likoi neman, I will establish for myself a faithful kohen. Kasher bilvavi uvenavshi yaseh, he will do what is in my heart and in my soul. Uvanisi lo bayis neman, I will build for him a faithful house, that he will be in the base of English. Bisalech lifnei mishichi, he will go in front of my anointed one, meaning the king, kol hayom, all the days. V'haya kol hanosar v'veischa, and it will be all those who will remain from your household. Yavo liishtach avoslo, they will come to bow to him. La'goras kesef v'chikar lachem, for a little bit of money, in order to get a little bit of money and to get a little bit of bread. V'amar, and he'll say, s'cheni na, give me please a little bit. Oh, gather me in, alachas hakuhunos, to one of the groups of kohanim, le'echol pas lachem, to eat a little bit of bread.
What is he really saying there?
He's saying, so...
small point of what?
That's what?
What does the small point of the bread have to do with
it? The kohanim have no other livelihood other than the Beis HaMikdash. So since they will be relegated to a minor role in the Beis HaMikdash, in order for them to get anything, they're going to have to come begging to the competitor who's going to take over. So a very, very harsh judgment against the sons of Eli, against Eli himself, the sons of Eli. It's not going to happen immediately, but it's down the line, this is going to take place.
If it can't be corrected, what's the point in telling Eli all these horrible things are going to happen?
Good,
to you?
Okay, good, 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 good.
And who are the descendants of Eli that
good?
They were?
Good, okay. So we have several things to cover. We're not going to hit it all tonight, but we are going to try our best to do what we can. Number one, we have to understand what was the sins of the B'nai Eli. What was happening over here? On the one hand, the punishment seems very severe, which would seem to imply that there's a very serious sin going on. As when, in fact, especially the third one with the women, I mean, it sounds pretty serious. On the other hand, as we already pointed out, the fact that the language of the Navi is about the sins is a very light type of word for sinning, and the fact that when Eli admonishes them, he says also a very light type of admonishment, like, you know, don't do this, my boys. It's not good that what I'm hearing about you. You know, if this is what was going on, then how did you let them off with just a little bit of a little bit of admonishment? It should be much more serious. So, if this sin was really, truly serious, why do we find examples of words that don't seem to be consistent with that? And on the other hand, if it wasn't so serious, then why are they being punished so harshly? That's one thing we have to understand. We have to understand, what are these interludes with Shmuel doing here? About Shmuel, we were told three different times that he's growing and getting closer to Hashem, and he's doing great. And about his mother making him his nice little cloak, and they coming up to Shiloh, and they're like, where does that fit into the whole story? So that's a second issue that has to be dealt with. We have to deal with, who is this competitor that's going to take over. What does it mean that Hashem says, I had said you were going to be in my house forever, and now that's it, it's not going to happen. Instead, it's going to be a competitor, but you're still going to have to be a Kohen, you're still going to have to be there, and you're going to have to bow to him and in order to get your food from him.
Rabbi?
Yeah.
If a Kohen were to marry an inappropriate woman for a Kohen, do they lose their status as Kohen?
The children do. The Kohen himself does not lose his status, although he can't serve as long as he remains married to her. If he divorces her, then he can go back to his...
But if they were doing with the women, that's what I'm getting at.
Well, it doesn't say that they married them. Which would seem it's even worse.
I
it just seems to be very immoral.
But they still got to keep their status as Kohanim even after that? Hashem still kept them as Kohanim?
Okay, good. So that's another question. Like, so what? How do we understand what happened over here? So the first thing that you have to know is the Gemara in Shabbos says, Kol ha'omer b'nei Eli chatu, anyone who says that the children of Eli sinned, eino ela toa, is only making a mistake.
Oh, wow.
We've used this language before.
Mm-hmm.
We've used it for...
Malach Tavid, isn't
it? We used it for Reuven when we learned it. That was a Sunday night class. We learned it for Reuven, it says. Anybody says Reuven sinned, when it says that Reuven lived with Bilhah, with his father's wife. It says, Koloma Reuven Chata, and Elatoa is only making a mistake. It says that, the Gemara over there, it says that about several different people throughout Navi. Now, that does not mean they didn't sin. But it means anybody who believes that the sin that they did is literally what it says over here, and all we do is we just presume that the words here mean what we think it means, then we are making a mistake. That's what the Gemara is trying to tell us. Now, we've explained many times that the Navi, it begins in the Torah, but it's accentuated more in the Navi, that the Navi does not pull punches with the great people of Klal Yisrael. There's a great righteous person who does a sin. The Navi does not pull punches. The Navi will absolutely and completely call him on the carpet for the sin. That is what the Navi will do. So we don't whitewash what the great ones did wrong. If they did a sin, they're called on it. But at the same time, when they're called on it, the Navi will use language that appears to be a much more severe sin than it actually is. Now, the reason why the Navi does this, and it's consistent, it's done all the time, the reason why the Navi does this is because if the sin would be portrayed on the level that it actually was, which means on the subtle level that it was, we're talking about a great person who his sphere of choice is on a plane that is beyond our comprehension, because we struggle with the daily struggles of life, and we struggle with ourselves, the regular, you know, run-of-the-mill, should I speak the Lashon Hara or not speak the Lashon Hara, should I get angry or not get angry, and we fail, and we do the right thing, and we go back and forth, we do teshuva, and we sin again, and this is the level that we're on. The level that they're on, they're also struggling, but their struggle is on such a refined level, the two sides of the coin are both lofty levels for us, the good and the bad. Even the bad side of the coin is a level that for us would be, how have I, we could reach there. We would love to be on that madriga. So if the Navi would portray the sin on that level, we couldn't learn anything from it, because it would seem to us to be a struggle that we can't relate to. So the Navi will consistently use language that will take the sin that they did and extrapolate it out to what it would mean for somebody like us. Meaning that what Hophni and Pinchas did, where they were, on the lofty level that they were, is akin to somebody like us doing the terrible things that the Navi says. So that then Gemara makes it clear they did not commit any immoral acts with any women. But nevertheless, what they did was akin to somebody on where we are doing something like that. So what did they do with the women? Yes.
No, I was just saying that, you know, it says about great people that Hashem is strict with
yes.
people, kechut ha-sa'ara.
Right.
Why is it like that? Because that's what they see.
Yeah. They are capable of being more perfect.
They're aware of it.
Right. So Hashem always judges a person based on where they are. So the what did they do with the women? So yes.
Consider a very strong comparison with Nadav and Avihu, also Kohanim.
Yes, yes, yeah. Nadav and Avihu, but there, yeah, yeah, that is true. But here it seems
detail.
To be a little bit stronger. What's that?
This
no, this is much more detailed. Yeah,
but
yeah.
Wait, when the Nevi'im talk to the Jewish people and recommend them, is it in stronger language also, or that's not?
Usually not like this. It seems to be this, you know, sometimes yes.
So when the Navi says something, that the Jewish people are doing something horrible, are we reading it like, okay, it really wasn't that bad, or we're reading it like,
no,
yeah, they really did that?
No, there we read it literal. However, that remember that even if it's only a very small segment of the population doing it, but the rest, everybody else lets it go and doesn't stop it, everybody gets blamed. Right.
Couldn't that be what's going on here with Eli? That he didn't...
Yes, that can be what's going on. Yeah.
Eli didn't stop his sons and his sons didn't stop the lads.
Yes, yes. That is clearly part of what's happening over here. But what happened with the women? So what happened with women is this. The women would... The overall sin of the children of Eli, of the sons of Eli, has to do with their method of dealing with the sacrifices or the people offering the sacrifices. They were forcefully taking the meat. They were taking what they wanted. They were taking it prematurely. With the women, it's referring, the Gemara tells us, specifically to women who had had a baby. And the halacha is when a woman has a baby, she has to come to the Beis HaMikdash, or in this case to Shiloh, and offer sacrifices. And the because of the fact that it was a trip, you had to go up to Shiloh, sometimes they would come with their husbands, but frequently they would come by themselves. And I imagine, since we're talking about, if it was a boy, we're talking about 40 days after birth. If it's a girl, we're talking about 80 days after birth. We're talking about coming with an infant. Likely, they made the trip with an infant and came to the base, to Shiloh. The sacrifice was generally a bird sacrifice. Now, there's three types of sacrifices you can bring. Not every sacrifice, not every situation allows for all three types. Sometimes you must bring an animal, meaning a cow or a sheep or a goat. Sometimes you must bring a mincha, a flower offering, and sometimes it has to be a bird. And sometimes you have a choice. But with the women who had a baby, it was typically a bird offering that was brought. Birds have a lot less meat than whole animals, than sheep, goats, or especially cows. As a result, a bird offering is not as attractive to the Kohen who's going to partake of the sacrifice. So when the women would bring their sacrifices after having a baby, they were not given priority in the Beis HaMikdash in Shiloh, in the Mishkan. And they would often have to wait. Sometimes, by not taking their karban in a timely manner, the women would actually have to wait overnight in Shiloh instead of going home. And by detaining the women from their husbands for one night, the Navi accuses them of it being akin to having a relationship with them, because they are keeping them away from their husbands unnecessarily. That is what the Gemara says. Now, this is not something which is this is not like an obscure commentary. This is the Gemara's explanation for what happened over here. So, just showing you that the language is so powerful that they had a relationship, an immoral relationship with the women, when actually they never touched the women, but they were insensitive to the women getting back to their husbands in a timely manner. And as a result, they are accused of this. It's akin to it. Now, that's true of this third sin. Besides the fact that the third sin isn't even mentioned at the beginning, it's only mentioned as almost as a secondary aspect, and besides the fact that Eli says something very powerful, like, oh, well, you know, I don't like what I'm hearing about you. But even more than that, later when they're punished, they're punished primarily for the second sin, not the third one. They're primarily for taking the meat early, rather than waiting for the mizbeach to get its due. So if it really was an immoral act, you would think that that would be the sin that they'd be hit over the head for. But since that's not what happens, again, we see what the Gemara is saying, that it is not, in fact, the words that the Navi says. Now, I want to emphasize, it's not that the Navi's words are wrong. It's that the Navi is using language deliberately which magnifies what they did to a point where it's meaningful to us, where it's a type of thing that we can relate to.
Why such a hard punishment then?
So, hold on. That's a good question. What about the other two sins? So, the other two sins are sins with the meat. So here, they didn't take the women's sacrifices because they were scrawny. They're just birds. So they didn't get priority. So that was bad. And then when it was animals with a lot of meat, then they did pay a lot of attention to those sacrifices, and too much attention. They would take whatever meat they wanted. Mm-hmm. They would take the meat too early. Things of that nature. So what is the overall issue over here? And we are contrasted regularly with Shmuel. So here, let us once again put ourselves in the minds of the mindset of that time. You have Shiloh. Shiloh is where the Kohanim are. Remember, the Kohanim do not have land in Eretz Yisrael. How do the Kohanim have food to eat? How do the Kohanim have clothes to wear? How do they have a house over their roof over their head? Where do they get the rent money from?
The money that's given to the Mishkan.
So everything for the Kohanim comes from the Mishkan and the Beis HaMikdash. They're given sacrifices to eat. Their business, their livelihood is the Mishkan. That's everything. Now remember that before Elkanah, very few people came up to the Mishkan. It was a neglected mitzvah. Now, if the Jews are not regularly coming up to the Mishkan, then the Kohanim have a very hard time having livelihood because they don't have the infrastructure of the people coming up. In a perfect world, where you have a properly functioning Beis HaMikdash, like in the days of Shlomo, then you've got this beautiful building with the Kohanim all over the place, and they're revered, and there's a constant stream of hundreds and thousands of Jews constantly up and down to the Beis HaMikdash offering sacrifices, to the point where the Kohanim are very busy, constantly trying to wait on people, help people out, what do they need? This type of animal, that type of different shilas to be asked of, well, how do I do this, how do that? It's a happening place. The Beis HaMikdash is meant to be a happening place. But in the time of Eli, before Elkanah, it was a very neglected place. Jews were not regularly coming. That means the Kohanim were not getting their due.
They were poor.
They were certainly poor, and they were also not being treated properly. Now, what do you do if people are neglecting the mitzvah of the Mishkan, of Shiloh? And Kohanim, who should be held up as the example of righteousness that we need to look up to, they are our leaders, and they're being treated with disdain, they're being treated improperly. So there's always two ways of handling that sort of situation. One way of handling that situation is for the Kohen to assume a posture of importance and of like being above what's going on, where there's a certain shtolz, like, I'm the Kohen, and I expect you to treat me like the Kohen. And don't treat me like your buddy, I'm a Kohen. That kind of attitude. Now, that attitude is not wrong, it depends on the situation. Sometimes that's what's called for. Sometimes you need to do that. if people are don't even have a concept of what it's supposed to be, and they should have a concept of what it's supposed to be, and they should know better, sometimes you need to play the part. You know, that listen, you know, I'm not your buddy, I'm the Kohen. Then there's the other method, which we'll call it the softer method, which is what we're more used to as Americans, and that is that you go out and you talk to the people and you kind of encourage them. Listen, you got to do what's that?
You do kiruv,
right? And both methods have their time and their place.
Yes.
Both methods have their time and their place. I realize it's late and Mrs. Laguna has to leave, but
I can't leave because it's the most important.
I'm sorry. I know. I'm sorry. Today we do kiruv. We do kiruv for we try to bring our fellow Jews closer with a certain softness and sweetness. That's what we do. But there was a time in the United States where anybody who was willing to stand up for Torah had to stand up with a certain stubbornness, because otherwise they would have been swallowed alive. Mm-hmm. They had to stand up and say, this is Torah, this is the way it's going to be, and I'm not budging. And that stubbornness and that way of handling, that's what saved us. That's what kept Torah alive in those days, when that's all there was. When you're the very small minority, then you need to stand up for who you are, because otherwise you're finished. In the time of Eli, that was the posture that the Kohanim had. Elkanah was the one encouraging people to come up. Elkanah was slowly changing perception. He was changing the way people treated the Mishkan. It was a slow process, but he was doing it. We already learned that the primary result of Elkanah's self-sacrifice was Shmuel. Shmuel is born to his wife Chana because of this special mitzvah that Elkanah encouraged. There should have been a shift in the posture of the Kohanim. As the mitzvah of coming up to Shiloh was becoming more and more popular, and now it was the kind of thing that there were more people who were sympathetic to it, the Kohanim should have then softened their own posture. But Chafni and Pinchas, the sons of Eli, either chose not to do that, or didn't realize that they should change their posture. And as we pointed out, it was the Nar, it was the lad who was still following the party line of the Kohanim are in charge. If you don't listen, I will take it with force. Who do you think you are, not listening to the Kohen? That was the attitude. Again, that attitude is not wrong when you're dealing with a belligerent audience. But when you're dealing with people who are starting to come around, then there should have been a softer approach. There should have been a change, and that change didn't happen. Chafni and Pinchas evidently didn't realize how far it had gone. And they should have, and they're being held accountable for it. Hashem holds Eli and Chafni and Pinchas accountable. He takes them to task for not having changed the approach. The Navi is constantly contrasting what's happening with the Kohanim to Shmuel. Shmuel, who is the primary result of Elkanah and Chana, who the primary result of this new attitude in the Mishkan, in Shiloh, he is growing, he's closer to Hashem, he's becoming the Shmuel that we know about. Meanwhile, the Kohanim, these lads of the Kohanim, are still following the old guard, the old way it was, and there is no change. So this is an approach to what happened over here. It is not a malicious sin, it's an unintentional sin, as it says, chatas. But nevertheless, it's still a very serious sin, because it retarded the growth of people coming to the Mishkan. Elkanah was putting in to bring the people to Shiloh, and instead of there being a receptive way of dealing with them, the old methods still stood. he brought the people in, but they still were getting the same kind of cold shoulder attitude. And that was destructive. And Hashem does not tolerate that from the Kohanim. This method of doing things was going on for a long time, but it never mattered until now. Now is when they get punished, because until now, it wasn't necessarily the wrong approach. But once you have Shmuel, who is growing, Elkanah and Hannah have brought the people in, the attitude should have changed. And it didn't, and therefore they are taken to task. And it's a very serious punishment, because the Kohanim, as Chani pointed out, like all the great ones, are held to a very, very high standard. We're not finished with the whole explanation, but at least for now, that's a stopping point. Yes?
So, if a Kohen comes to visit, let's say, the Beit HaMikdash or the Mishkan for the Chagim, they're not allowed to participate as a Kohen?
No, they could. They could.
Because it never says that Elkanah served.
Elkanah was a Levi.
Oh, he was a Levi.
He was a Levi. Shmuel and Elkanah were Levian. Yeah.
What about two Kohenim?
No, there were many more. But they were the leaders. Chafi and Pinchas were the leaders.
All the lads of Kohanim walking under them.
Yeah.
So what about them taking the whatever pieces of meat that they wanted? Were they not aware of that?
Okay, very good. Okay, so we're out of time. So Chani brings up that we did not talk about taking the meat that they wanted. We talked about taking the meat early. We have to talk about that a little bit. So good, thank you. Hopefully we'll remember to cover that next time.
Right.
When we also have to talk about the punishment itself, the nature of the punishment, and we also have to discuss what is this competition in the Mishkan that is being discussed. So next time we're not going to read any further. We still have much to cover in the rest of this parak.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to torahmediaatlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.